Welcome to At a Crossroads with a Naked Podcaster, where we bear it all spiritually and emotionally. I'm your host, Jen Taylor. Each week on the podcast, I'll bring you an inspiring message to support you in designing and creating a vibrant, fulfilling life. Before we dive in, please visit the Facebook community in the links to ask questions that I can answer during this live podcast. At a Crossroads with a Naked Podcaster, for those of you who know that there is more to life and that our true authentic souls are built for greatness. You are built with strength and love that is meant to shine through in times of conflict and in times of celebration. Welcome. I cannot wait to bear it all with you. In my business, I coach Christian women to step into who they are meant to be, inspired by their purpose and God-given gifts. Find the link in the description to join my private Facebook group. I can't wait to see you there. Let's get started. Hello and welcome, everyone. Today I have, doing all the settings, today I have Brian Hamilton on. How are you, Brian?
I'm excellent. Yourself?
Great. And one thing that I already want people to know that I love about you is your laughter. I love it.
Thank you.
Yes, we talked for just a couple minutes before we get started, and it's already my favorite.
Awesome. I'll take it.
How are you today? Yeah, I mean, 100%, right? How are you today?
I'm doing well. Mm-hmm. I can't complain. And I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you today and, you know, share your platform. I think this is it's a great platform, and I'm happy just to be a part of it. So, yeah, it's really made my day.
Thanks. Yay. How did we meet?
It was through Podmatch.
Yay, Podmatch. Thanks, man. That's awesome. Yeah. Yeah. This is so great. I love not knowing the person pretty much at all. I want to jump in though, because your stories, I mean, I love every story. I'm super excited to share your story today. So I don't know, you have three podcasts. I have two of your websites up, so I can refer to those. They're in the show notes, in the description for people, but I'll also put them in comments where comments show up.
Thank you.
Why don't you jump in? And I added your favorite scripture. It shows up on some places easier than others. Jump in and tell us, you've got three podcasts. So I don't know which one you want to start with.
All right. Well, I'll go kind of in order. So the first podcast that I started was the Healthcare Security Cast. So yeah, as you can probably guess by the title, it's focused on healthcare security. That's where I spent most of my career, was focused in that area. So I worked as a frontline security officer in hospitals and also worked in some management roles in different hospitals as well. Currently serve as a board member with the International Association for Healthcare Security and Safety. So that is really just a resource to help individuals in that field just learn from each other and just really, really promote growth opportunities for individuals as well. So I've been doing that one for, the end of December, it'll be 2 years, over 100 episodes in, I think 118 or something like that right now. So that's my first podcast. My second one is one that I co-host with a gentleman named Mike Hodges. We'll be celebrating 1 year of doing that podcast. It's a monthly podcast. And it's focused on, again, workplace violence in healthcare. So still along the same topical ideas. And then the one that I launched most recently, we launched this one in April. It's hosted by my wife, Tanya, and I. It's called Disrupt the Everyday. And it's a little bit of a different approach. It's not focused on healthcare security or healthcare at all. We're just trying to help people navigate life while disrupting the status quo. So that's kind of the thinking behind that. It really, what we want to do is talk about a broad number of topics that are going to be helpful for almost anybody. So we talk about relationships, parenting, pretty much anything that you can think of. We want to cover it, finances, whatever it may be. So that's kind of the three podcasts, and all really easy to find. If you search the names or you search my name, I think I'm the only Brian Hamilton out there. So it makes it pretty easy.
That's like cheating almost. I'm Jen Taylor. That's totally cheating. I am so jealous of that, I gotta say. Okay. So first, what made you, your three podcasts? So I know what one podcast takes in time and effort. And you actually tell me about what you do in your job, and that, if you're more specific about that, I think we'll understand the first podcast that you started and why, and then take us through the kind of, I mean, you did the why a little bit on the podcast with your wife, but I really want to feel more, because it takes a lot of time and effort to do a podcast, and you work And you're married with four kids.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess what I'll say to that is, okay, so I'll start with my career. So currently, in the last year, I've actually started a new position. So I've been working with Omnigo Software, which is a company that focuses, we really serve public safety and law enforcement organizations. I guess what we offer is incident reporting software and other security management software. So it's actually products that I used when I was working specifically in healthcare security. And that was actually how I came to know the company. Through a number of, I guess, things that I didn't expect, I had this opportunity to join the organization. Absolutely love it. And it's great because I'm getting to show people a product that I use that I found to be very effective for me when I was in that environment. And really, that's kind of, again, healthcare security has kind of been the passion behind a lot of what I've been doing. So, and I feel like I'm going off track here in terms of asked me.
No, but that's what you do and why you're passionate about. I don't know that I understand healthcare security or what that means.
So I can unpack that a bit if you want.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah, so healthcare. So just in terms of any healthcare or hospital facilities, essentially, the part that I played was the part of being part of the security team. So the individuals who respond if there's a violent person or, the ones who make sure the place is safe, basically lock up the place at night, the individuals.
So it's actually
right now,
the security of the healthcare institution.
Exactly. Yeah. So I really cater to those, again, those frontline officers and more so the leaders of those teams. So the managers, directors, chief security officers, those individuals are kind of my audience on the healthcare security cast.
Wow. Okay. So I wasn't thinking that it was literal, and it's literal.
It's literal. Yeah.
I think that's incredible. Okay. So that's amazing. So you start this first podcast. What was the passion behind? I mean, lots of people want to start podcasts. You're 100 episodes in, so you didn't just start one. Like you're doing a podcast on it. What made you feel like that was the best route to go?
Well, it was for, again, I'm a learner. So I really wanted to have the opportunity to learn from people who have been doing the job a lot longer than I have. Again, when I started it, I was actually still in the field and, again, just trying to grow. And I figured, this would be a great way for me to learn, number one, but to also share my learnings with others. So, and it gave me exposure to people who maybe I wouldn't have had exposure to have an hour-long conversation about whatever the topic of my choosing was or a topic that was relevant that I wanted to make sure to discuss. So that was kind of the idea behind it originally. And again, I knew I would be able to have some great conversations and be able to share that with really anybody in the community, the healthcare security community, who wanted to learn and wanted to listen.
I think that's incredible because it is, like I said, a lot of time and effort, but the connections are amazing. Jump into the second podcast.
Yeah. So actually the person who I interviewed, I believe it was on episode 3, Mike Hodges, we spoke about workplace violence, and a lot of people don't realize this who don't work in healthcare, but workplace violence is a really big issue. So,
okay.
Yeah. And I figured, there's an opportunity for this to be its own kind of standalone podcast. So I had reached out to Mike and pitched the idea to him, and, he was all for it. So we started doing that one on a monthly basis as well. It started off just the two of us having discussions about it. It was more so led by Mike, and I just kind of would prompt him with questions or comments. And then we expanded it to bring other people onto the podcast. So that's where we've been with that one. And again, it's been going for almost a year. September 15th will be a year since we first launched.
Yay! I can't remember. There's some statistic about, first of all, podcasts are really hard to get any statistics on. But there is a statistic about like the percentage of podcasts that have 7 or fewer episodes. And for people who podcast for a long time, like when you're saying 100 episodes and the amount of work, I'm kind of like, although I want, even if people have 2 or 3 episodes, I want those to be available, but I want them to also not be counted in the number of podcasts in the world because it's so frustrating to get analytics. But so it's a huge thing to have a podcast going. Now, I think I personally am most excited about your wife.
Oh, hey, I'm excited about my wife as well.
I mean,
so I'll take it.
Differently than you. I mean, the podcast with your wife, but your wife too. But yeah, so tell me a little bit about why you decided to start that. And really, I mean, I love Disrupt the Everyday, and you did describe it a little. Can you go into more detail about the podcast and you two, your interaction and how that works?
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess what it came down to was I had the idea of wanting to talk about something other than healthcare security. At that point, I was close to 100 episodes in. I was like, you know what? I want to share some other stories from other people. Like, I do love the other podcasts that I do, but I'd like to kind of just talk about something different. So I pitched the idea. I was telling my wife that this is what I was thinking of doing. She already knew how much time the other two podcasts took. So she came back with another idea a couple of days later and said, hey, we should do this together. And I was all for that because my first thing was I can teach someone how to edit and get help editing all these podcasts.
Okay, a minute. Like, that's sort of genius. For those of us doing a podcast, we're like, free editing? What?
Exactly, right? So yeah, and it is something for us to do together. You know, again, with the state of the world for the last year and a half, it's been hard to just even try to find things to do together outside of, you know, what we do day to day. There's a lot of, especially where I live in Ontario, Canada, we've had a lot of lockdowns, we've had a lot of restrictions. So being able to do this together was another way for us to interact. Wife also, she does home daycare. So for her, it's an opportunity to interact with adults as well, because she interacts with children all day, and other than me, usually there's not too many adults that she's getting to interact with. So just another piece to that. But really the focus there was, and it's hard to say, like, maybe, you know, when I look at it, there isn't really one focus to our podcast. We just want to be able to, again, it's learning for us, but it's also learning for people who are maybe similar to us, not even necessarily similar to us, but who are just trying to be better in everyday life.
I'm sure we'll get to more about your wife later. She does an at-home daycare right now. But she had a much different career before that. Like, I would love to chat with your wife about her background, right? Because it aligns with my background. So it was all a big change for her, I'm sure.
Yeah. So really it was us having our fourth child. Mm-hmm. And, you know, after the first child, I was trying to convince her to do the stay at home thing. But, you know, she didn't think it was necessary then, even after we had our first and then we had twins. Even after that, you know, she still went back to work. But with our fourth, again, I was like, okay, you know what, when you look at it, all of the driving that you're doing, the wear and tear on our vehicles, because there was a lot of driving involved with the social work. And, you know, like at the end of the day, then just having to come home rushed, I'm like, I'd rather work a couple more jobs, because I've always worked multiple jobs, but I'd rather work a couple more jobs and you stay home and maybe us just have to make some lifestyle adjustments than having to do this and just all the stress that comes with it. And it is a difficult job too. She had been in the field for around 15 years. So,
yeah,
bearing other people's burdens does take a toll on you.
So, yep, 100%. 100%. She did social work, and then she also worked in a shelter for abused women and children. This is, for those of us who have done some of that work, it is a heavy burnout. And I don't even like saying, like, high burnout rate. Although you kind of do, right?
Yeah.
So I get it, and the wear and tear, but what, I mean, kudos though for her wanting to continue to work through the first couple of kids and you supporting her, and kudos to making that change when the time came and you willing to take on extra jobs. You do, when you're talking about staying at home, there is like the wear and tear on the vehicle, the gas, the, like, how much you're paying in addition to for eating, just for food, if you are. I mean, like, there are so many factors taken, the amount of daycare. I mean, when I looked at it, it was like, I'm basically working just to maintain the status quo, right? It's tough. It's tough.
And that was the other thing I didn't mention is the daycare. Like, we're going to have to, we need you to work and just go through all this stress so that we can pay for someone else to spend the time with our kids.
So, right. And I knew that I would do a better job with my kids. Actually, I knew I'd do a better job with other people's kids too, but that wasn't really the point. You know, I mean, so she started a daycare.
Yeah, she started a daycare because she had done mat leave, and she decided to do daycare and just to, you know, bring in some money to help out, and also just to do more than be home with our kids. Like she, and I'm very careful to say just be home with our kids because it's a big job, especially.
Oh my gosh.
You definitely know it, but with a full house, there's a lot that goes into it.
Yeah.
But, you know, bringing other kids into the house, is a totally different dynamic. And she still had, like, obviously being, I shouldn't say obviously, but being involved with social work, she's very people focused. She's she's a social butterfly. She's very people oriented. So it gave her another opportunity to kind of fulfill that. And at the same time, she's doing it from home. So
I understand when I had my kids at home, I considered doing an at-home daycare and I decided like my mental stability, I can do my own kids, but doing it for a living changes the parameters that you're able to work. Like you cannot leave your house with a bunch of other people's kids necessarily. And it changed things so much. And I'm an extrovert that I knew probably not the best idea for me. So I get it. The podcast is awesome for that. So that's amazing. Let's jump back in time, shall we?
Sure.
All right. So tell me a little bit, jump in wherever you feel comfortable with your story and we'll tie back into this at the end.
Yeah, sure. I guess I will, I'll start with childhood. I was, I was the youngest of in total six kids. My parents, okay. I'm the only child that my parents had together 2 years after they were married. They were together until I was around 20 years old. So it was in, been through over 20 years of marriage before they got divorced. Around that same time, and, just growing up, I would say we were like an average family. We did have some struggles financially. We moved a lot. At the time it was normal, so you don't really think anything of it.
Yep.
But looking back, I know my dad worked really hard for us to have what we did have. So we were, I feel like we were kind of, whatever socioeconomical class we managed to get to, we were kind of at the bottom rung of it.
Yep.
but I always had everything I needed. Like I said, my dad worked really hard. Oftentimes was working three jobs. I shared this with somebody the other day, but I remember when he used to pick me up from kindergarten when I first started school, but it was between him sleeping for his job. So he'd come pick me up and he'd be asleep for maybe half hour, an hour till my mom got home and took care of things. But he would often be, he'd sometimes be in the wrong uniform going to work. He'd be having nightmares about his jobs and talking in his sleep about, apples and oranges because he worked at a food terminal. But,
wow.
So he really showed me what hard work was. And, I learned that from him. And I guess maybe that's why I do multiple jobs now and always have, even though there's not necessarily a need to from a financial perspective.
Mm-hmm.
But so yes, that's how I kind of grew up. My parents, like I said, gotten divorced when I was around 20 years old. Around that same time, I was actually engaged and getting married myself. And although there were probably some early indicators that it wasn't a great decision, I was kind of fueled by, my parents had struggled with this. I want to show success in this in my life. So I went forward and I was like, I'm going to make sure that this works out. And obviously, we're talking about it now because it didn't, but, right. By the time I was 23, I was divorced. I was bankrupt and, I was driving a Toyota Tercel with indicators that didn't work. I had to make hand signals. I was really, really struggling financially. I remember there was one point where I paid $2.50 for gas because it was all of the money I had on me. And I just remember going in with my handful of change to pay, trying to be very discreet. And the person who was at the till made sure to make a scene out of it. And I was like, it was such an embarrassing situation. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it was like, I felt like I'd hit rock bottom. There was one point where I remember I was driving home from work and I was just, I felt like it was rock bottom for me. Looking back at it, I think now, it really wasn't that bad. You can come back from being bankrupt. You can come back from being divorced. Obviously I've been able to, but at the time it felt like the end of the world. And I thought about just driving my car off the road and like, I can just get out of all of this because it just seemed like it was so much. It was just the stress from it. It was just so heavy.
Yeah.
And for whatever reason, I guess maybe because I'm a logical person, but I got thinking about it. And obviously today I'm here because I decided not to do that. I think one of the motivating factors was, if this doesn't, if I'm not successful in this, I've just made another problem for myself now. But also at the same time, it's like, okay, well, I'm in this rut. there has to be some way out of it. So I've just got to figure it out.
Well, suicide isn't necessarily always ending your life. It's escaping from the pain of the situation. And that's a personal opinion. However, I just think in the moment, like you said, in that moment, it felt like you didn't know how to escape from it. It was overwhelming and you just wanted to escape. So that's a place that most of us have been, even if we haven't taken the next step in considering suicide. Tell me about the marriage and the bankruptcy.
Yeah. So again, just making some bad financial decisions and probably, again, at an early age, helping people maybe when I shouldn't have, when I didn't really have the means to do so. I guess what I kind of would live by now is, you know, if you're going to lend money to somebody or do something like that, you shouldn't lend out money that you don't necessarily need back, because there's no guarantee. Even right. Someone who's well-intentioned could fall on their own hard times and not be able to pay you back. So, you know, there's something I definitely learned from that time. But yeah, the marriage, it was just a bad match. You know, without getting into specifics, because I don't think it's fair to give one side of a story. It didn't work out. And, you know, I found myself back at my mom's house, living with my mom and my stepdad for 6 months until I could, you know, kind of get on my feet and start working towards building something else and getting rid of, you know, getting rid of the stigmas that come with bankruptcy and just end a divorce really at the same time. But the thing that was painful about the bankruptcy was I started off really young with really good credit. I had gotten a credit card early on and made sure I always paid it off. So I had a good credit score. I had started contributing to a retirement when I was 18. And then I went, you know, within 5 years I was bankrupt. So it was a big shift there. I felt like it was, even though, again, when I look at it today, you know, the little bit of money that I had saved was a big deal for me at the time. So it really felt like I had just, I had really lost a lot. And, at the time it felt insurmountable, but obviously, again, it wasn't. It was just something that had to be worked through.
I mean, when you lose almost everything you own, it doesn't really matter. And you can't pay your bills. It doesn't matter how much it was. It was still everything you had. And filing for bankruptcy, there's a financial part of it, but it's the emotional part of filing that I think is so difficult. Yeah, you can come back from it, but you have to get through the emotions of whatever that felt like to you, whatever type of failure or insert adjective here for you. That's still a lot to work through, and on top of ending a marriage. So
And some of the self-talk is, you know, just that you're not capable, you don't know what you're doing, you're stupid. And, you know, if you've been told that throughout your life, you know, and those things kind of rear their head again later in life, you feel it. I guess if I go back to when I was younger, one of our moves had taken us out of a very diverse area, because it was an area that my dad wanted us to get out of. It just wasn't a good place for me to grow up in his opinion. And he was definitely right. But we moved to an area that was not very diverse. You know, after being at the school for half a year, I ended up being like the only minority in this whole K-8 school. And it was a big shift for me. I struggled in school. I struggled very mightily in school, got held back a grade, and, you know, and then had a growth spurt really kind of around that same time. So, you know, you're already the kid who failed, school the year before. I'm 6'3". I'm already kind of bigger than people anyway. So now I'm the really big, stupid kid in the class. Right. So some of those things were kind of playing in my head again, when I was going through that time, like, you know, failed at two very critical areas. So yeah, it was just kind of trying to navigate all of that. But yeah, the self-talk will really can really do you in.
Yeah, especially if you're carrying, I mean, which we all do, we're carrying it from those moments in childhood, staying back, you know, feeling stupid. I mean, it's just packing on that baggage, right?
Absolutely.
Okay. So this happened and you are contemplating ending your life. What made you decide not to?
This is probably going to sound bad, but I think a big part of it was the fear that it wouldn't work and I would still have all of these same problems and now not a vehicle to get myself to work. Right. I think that was a lot of it. Like,
I'm not laughing at you. I get it.
No, but the rationale is pretty, pretty flawed when I think back to it, but it's like, yeah, you know what, if I don't do this right, and I have a good, at this rate in my head, I'm thinking I have a good rate of not doing things properly, I'm just going to have another problem now, right? Like I'm not going to have a vehicle. I'm still going to have all this debt, and now it's going to be even worse. So
now I'm alive without a car. Also,
yeah. Maybe I do damage to myself. Who knows? Right. And then, the other thing was too, I was thinking about other people, like my parents. My dad passed away 2 years ago, but at the time I still had both of my parents, and you know, just all these things that kind of go through your head. So that's why I didn't do it. And you know, that was kind of when I guess maybe emotionally it hit that rock bottom point where I think you really can't get too much lower than wanting to take your own life. But then I guess the shift was that, you know, I just got some newfound or maybe remotivated determination and decided, okay, well, I'm going to take a swing at this. I'm going to take a swing at life and try to, try to come back from where I am now.
I've had other people describe their suicide attempts, like, oh my gosh, I'm failing at everything. And now I'm failing at suicide too. Who have had attempts that were not successful, and thank goodness later on, but in the moment they're like, I'm such a failure. I can't even properly do this. You know, I think that I've heard that as a common thread. So you're at that bottom. You decide you don't want to wreck your car and mess it up. Okay.
It was pretty bad as it was. It was pretty bad as it was. It didn't need any more damage.
It doesn't sound like it was necessarily in great shape. So, no. At that point, I mean, did you ever hit the point or explain to me how you felt that, you know, if you feel like it really can't get much worse, you don't have much to lose either. Like what do you have to lose at this point? A car that's not in good shape. I mean, that's actually kind of a great place to be. At what point did you start, you decided not to attempt suicide, but then at what point did you decide to start making a change? Because you're 23 at this point, you're young. Yeah. And it's tough. You're on your own. It hasn't been that long. You're divorced. That's hard. What was your shift in mindset at that point?
Really? So yeah, just during that drive, it was like, it was kind of what you said. I am, you know, for all intents and purposes, I was really early on in my life. So, you know, even though I realized, okay, it is going to be, I am going to have a long road ahead trying to come back from all this, and maybe I'll always struggle. I thought that, and I know that was something I definitely saw in my family. We did struggle financially, but you know, I guess the alternative was just it all being over. So, you know, I don't know if it was necessarily any one thing, but the shift in focus was just maybe trying to prove people wrong. I think that was a lot of it, because again, like if I go back to when I was younger, just kind of what I had been told, what the narrative was, that I you know, wasn't good enough, wasn't smart enough. And I actually, you know what, probably up until recently, my fuel has been, now that I think about it, now that you asked me that question, this is probably why you're a great coach, but you got this out of me now. Just thinking about it, it was really just wanting to prove people wrong, I think. And, you know, up until a few years before, until maybe I started growing in my career where people really believed in me, that was always my motive. I just wanted to prove people wrong. I just, you know, very competitive, wanted to win. So that's kind of, and that, maybe that came from playing sports, but I think that was that was a huge part of it.
I mean, I have something really interesting to tell you that we'll see. I'm going to put it in the chat, so be patient with me.
Yeah, for sure.
Hang on. This is really incredible. Okay, I wanted to word it right. Because it's something amazing that this is our conversation right now. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to definitely copy this to put it anywhere it doesn't show up. So go ahead and take a look at that comment.
Was it the
September? It's about the month of September. Wow. Yeah.
How interesting.
How interesting. So I left a link for people. So September is National Suicide Awareness Month. And right now, the week as we're speaking. This is National Suicide Prevention Week. I'm having some special release podcasts this week, specifically about suicide, one tomorrow and possibly one later on in the week, because it's impacted me in my life personally very strongly. And I'm going to have a couple of my kids on that had fortunately failed suicide attempts come on so we can build more awareness around. So I feel really blessed to be interviewing you, and how incredible it is that we just did scheduling the way scheduling worked. There was, I didn't know about your story or schedule you, or even I wasn't really even aware of your story or when this week was. And we happen to be discussing this now. So I want to make sure people know that there are resources. I left one. So anyone who is contemplating suicide, and that you are not alone in this, this has affected me directly. My next door neighbor shot himself in the head, and I found him 10 years ago. And my stepmom, on my father died, and he was one of the meanest people I've ever met. So it was a relief. And my stepmom was able to remodel the house, and we had a great relationship after my dad died. And she committed suicide on the third anniversary of his death. So wow. Her baggage was so heavy that even with all of these close relationships and him being removed from her life and not able to hurt her anymore, she still succumbed to feeling like her pain was so overwhelming she couldn't make it. So this is a very personal conversation to me. I know we're taking a break from your story, but I just realized as we were talking about, like, holy cow, wait, this is National Suicide Awareness Month and Prevention Week. And so I want to definitely do a call out to anyone feeling like they're in that place. That has been a much higher occurrence and much more significant issue in the last 18 months since COVID. So I applaud you for sharing this story. And I'm very grateful that it's now happening now. So thank you for that. So you're 23, your attitude's like, you want to prove everybody wrong with woo-woo. I mean, amen to that, man. Yeah. That's awesome. And this is also, at what point were you introduced to Christianity?
So, you know what, my best friend, who is my best friend to this day, you know, we've known each other since we were 12. He always went to church growing up. I was probably like the bad influence on him. We played basketball together, but
good job. Okay.
But, you know, eventually, like, I started going to church with him. But when I really, you know, when I really got saved was after all of this. And it was through a ministry. It was through actually a basketball ministry at a church. It was actually a church that my family and I had went to for about a year when I was a kid. And there's a guy named George Tynes who introduced me, you know, who really had the talk with me. And that was really where it all kind of started for me. I actually had that shift and took Christianity seriously. Before I started going to church with my friend, you know, maybe when I was around 20, all around the same time. But I didn't really know what I was doing. I was just kind of going and just going through the motions. I just felt like it was a thing that I should do because it was a part of my upbringing, but not a big part of it. Like I said, there was about a year, maybe a year and a half that we actually went to church. And you know, my mom used to read the Bible to me, but it wasn't really like I had to teach, you know, there wasn't a lot of teaching or a lot of understanding on my part. So when I got to explore it as an adult, that was where I really kind of dove in.
How did that feel to you to start? I mean, when you're exposed to it as a kid, it's different than making a decision as an adult. I feel like those are two, it's great to have that, those memories or the information or the familiarity from when you're a child, even if it's sporadic, it's not completely unfamiliar, but really stepping into that is something very, as an adult, is something very different. So when you started going back, what was that like for you? How big of a shift, and how long did it take you to really fully step into that?
Yeah, you know, it was pretty right at the time. Like once I was actually serious and I, you know, my focus had kind of shifted that way, I had, you know, I became really involved. It was big for me. I started reading my Bible every day. You know, I just had kind of more focus and more direction in what I was doing. It wasn't so much going through the motions.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's really where it was for me. And then when I really kind of stepped it up was when I got married, and then, you know, we decided that we wanted to have kids. When my wife first got pregnant And so it was a combination of two things. My wife got pregnant, somebody at work kind of de facto started telling people that I was like this Bible expert. And I'm like, I'm not a Bible expert, but I'm like, also at the same time, I'm going to be a parent raising kids in a Christian home. At this point, it's just one kid. So I'm like, I actually have to really do a deeper dive into this. So, you know, while my wife was pregnant, I think I read my Bible cover to cover twice during that time, and really just got deep into the Word. And that was, again, that the amount of wisdom and knowledge in that book is life-changing. You know, if you really apply some of those elements of it.
Yeah. And, you know, like even my journey in Christianity, I was raised in it sort of, and then I joined a cult, and then you have to leave the cult, and then you have to really find your way after that in Christianity. So your belief, your faith can be 100%, but your journey kind of looks like my kids would probably say, yeah, it's not like you always went to church, or it's not like we always read the Bible, or it's like, yeah, that, but your internal faith can be there, and the outward, or the journey, or the finding the church, or the reading the scriptures every day. It's committing to that can look, you know, a windy path. And I think most Christians feel the same way. It's not like you were born and, man, it was full on perfection of reading your scriptures every day for your whole life, but good for you for embracing that. And was it a life change with you and your wife to really step into that more fully?
Yeah, there's actually my wife grew up in a Christian family as well. So she was probably more grounded than I was coming into that relationship. Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, just us being able to do those things together, be in church together, and, you know, raise our family to the best of our ability biblically as we do together. Yeah, it's obviously deepened our relationship. I think it's enhanced our relationship with our children. You know, and I really took to it. All of our kids have Bible names. Even our dog, has a Bible name.
No,
it's just kind of my nerdy thing yet.
you win. What are the names, or are you comfortable sharing the names? First names?
Yeah. Josiah, Malachi, Naomi, Asher, and our dog is Samson.
Is he small?
He's very small. Yeah, he's a miniature golden doodle. Yeah.
In my mind, Samson had to be tiny, because it's like a play on words. It's so fun. That, I mean, how incredible. So what do you think were the things that at your lowest, you do the divorce, the bankruptcy, you're not really stepping into Christ yet, you decide you want to prove it wrong. Was it mostly that internal drive and compass that helped you get through that? Were there other things that happened or people involved that also helped you get through those struggles?
Well, I'll say people helped me, but not necessarily with their knowledge, because I didn't tell anybody about this until I didn't actually talk about this probably until like last year. I hadn't even told my best friend, hadn't told my wife that this was something that crossed my mind. It just, you know, that happened. It was, you know, it was just this long drive home where I was contemplating this, and then I just decided not to. And I just, but a big part of it was faith, because, you know, when we go back to that basketball ministry, I think it was only probably a couple days after where I was there. And I think that's the story for a lot of people too. They hit that rock bottom before they really dive into their faith on a deep level. But I think that was kind of what fueled it, because I knew everything that I was struggling with, and I wanted to be able to overcome it. But I think deep down, I knew I couldn't do it alone. Mm.
So you didn't do meditation or therapy or anything like that?
No. Like I said, I didn't even talk about it. I didn't even tell anybody, because I was just ashamed that I even had that thought, and I didn't want anybody to know.
And you moved forward with your own, with your faith and with your own internal drive to just, basically you're proving yourself wrong mostly, right?
Yeah, that's a strong part of it. Yeah.
And I think I don't want to stereotype, but I think men are probably better at not talking about it.
I think we are exceptional at it, actually.
Really? I mean, like, you've got to be exceptional at something. So we took everything else. I'm kidding. I'm totally kidding. I think a lot of us stuff stuff down, but yeah. I know in my experience, men tend to stuff things down or just not talk about them. even more than women do. And I don't think anybody stuffing things down is a good thing. So you went forward with your own inner fortitude and faith, and then you found Christianity more, you stepped into it more yourself. You found a place, because I think I've called myself a Christian my whole life. That looks different at different times.
Yeah.
So you stepped into it and then you met your wife, correct?
Yeah, actually, okay. Yes, I did. Okay. So that was the sequence.
So tell me more about her. Tell me about meeting her. You've been married before.
Yeah. So yeah, that was obviously a difficult conversation to, I was always transparent about that, but it was more so with her and her parents. Right. We're the same age. We're like just a little bit less than a year apart. So, you know, at 23, and I met her that same year as well. So at 23, I met her, and obviously her parents weren't necessarily keen on her dating a guy who just went through a divorce, you know, minus the bankruptcy. Yeah. Nobody knew about that other than her, but
you've got this, she's like, yeah, mom, like, dad, I met this great guy.
Yeah, exactly. Right. That's a great way to start a conversation, but no, how, so
bankrupt divorce. And this is his car.
and he works as a security guard at a mall making $11 an hour. Yeah. It's a great, great start.
You're at least working. I mean, okay. So, I'm also asking, when you tell this story, like, you have personal feelings of failure. Mm-hmm. So yeah, jump in. Sorry, I'm interrupting.
Not at all. So,
tell me about her more.
Yeah. So how we met was actually, it was through someone who I worked with. So this is an interesting story as well. This guy that I worked with, I had worked with him for about a month, and then he asked me to be the best man in his upcoming wedding. I was like, okay, it threw me off at first. I'm like, he must not know anybody else. I obviously know that's not the case, but we've only known each other a month, but we really hit it off. We were really good friends. So yeah, I started helping, you know, I went to go do the tux fittings. We were kind of getting everything set up. I met his wife, or his soon to be wife, and his young son, and, you know, hit it off with their family. Now at this time, my wife Tanya was working at that shelter for abused women and children that you had referenced. Mm-hmm. And she worked there with his wife. And they were, I think they were both part-time there. Okay. So they were working a night shift there one weekend. And, you know, I had stayed over at his place that night. This was a little bit after the wedding, but I stayed over at his place because she was going to be gone for the night. So we were there just kind of chilling out with him and his son. And then she came home from work the next day, and she's like, oh, I have the perfect girl for you. So I was like, okay, well, I'll trust your judgment. Like, whatever. I'm not opposed to it. I wasn't really necessarily looking, but I guess that's what people say is when you're not looking.
Oh, that's the worst. That's happened. Yes. Amen to that.
But I was like, yeah, sure. You know, I trust your judgment. So eventually she got her to agree to speak to me. We started talking actually first via email, and then we started talking on the phone. And then, you know, I was just wanting to take things slow. And, okay. You know, that was kind of what we had discussed, but then she was like, oh, we should set up a time to meet. We should go on a date. So I was like, okay, sure. And she set a day, and I was looking at the calendar. And again, you know, talking about my financial struggles, it was actually October 6th with our first date, because I pushed it back a couple of days because that was when I got paid, and that was going to be the only time I was going to be able to, you know, support a reasonable type of date. So we went to, Playdium. We went for dinner, and, yeah, then it was weird. Like, after our first date, and we had talked on the phone for hours on end. You know, when you first meet somebody, you have so much to share, so much to learn about the other person. So we would have these long, long conversations. And then it was like, after that first date, I said, you know what, this is probably going to freak you out, but I see you being the type of person that I could be married to one day. And for whatever reason, she didn't turn the other way and run off like this, this divorced bankrupt guy telling her, yeah, I'm going to marry you one day, right after one date. So,
well, wait, how long had you guys been emailing and talking on the phone at that point though?
It wasn't that long. Okay. I could actually, I remember the date. September 28th was the first email. I'm really good with dates for some reason, but September 28th was the first email. October 6th was the first date.
I was trying to cut you slack, like, but that didn't, that's it, not.
It felt like longer at the time because again, you have those hours and hours of conversations, like 3-4 hour conversations.
Right.
And yeah, it seemed like longer, but when I look back at the dates, I'm like, wow, that really wasn't that long.
I mean, you know, I absolutely didn't want to meet anybody when I met my husband. And my oldest biological daughter and a mutual friend, they were fixing me up on dates and I was humoring them. And I was pretty apparent about that. Mm-hmm. And we texted for a week and we talked on the phone once. And we've been together since our first date. We've never been apart. Actually, since that first text, I mean, sometimes he says he knew from when he first, like the first text, he knew. I'm really glad he didn't tell me that. So I believe that those things happen.
Yeah. Well, I didn't know from the first email, but after we talked a lot and then we spent a day together, I was like, okay. I know now, because at that point I knew what I didn't want and kind of started figuring out what I wanted based on what I knew I didn't want. So I kind of worked backwards. But
yeah.
She definitely checked off all the boxes.
Okay, so how long have you been married?
So August 12th, we celebrated 14 years of marriage.
Yay!
So, you know, if you want to do the quick math for anybody who's trying to do it in their head now. So we dated for less than 2 years before we were married.
Oh, that's actually, considering how things started.
Considering. Oh, yeah. Hey, a wedding's a lot of money. And when you don't have credit and you have to work multiple jobs to pay for it, we probably would have been married sooner if it wasn't for that.
So how was it meeting her parents and how was that journey? Because you started off saying that was a pretty big deal.
Yeah, well, so this was the other thing. So there was two opportunities to meet some of her family. So there was one time where we were just visiting, you know, her family lived out of town. We went to visit and we were visiting some of her friends, like her longtime friends. And we had to stop by her parents' house because she had to get something. And I met her brother there. I met her younger brother. And as we were about to leave, her dad came in. So I met her dad very briefly, you know, and then we just left. But then the next time was actually at a funeral. So I went from that to meeting her entire family at one time. And that was you know, about a month later. It was in early November. So I met her entire family at that point. But I guess, you know, for the most part, I think I fit in well. You know, people generally liked me. You know, I think the typical dad feelings probably arose in her father, especially kind of knowing my background. So he was, I'm sure I probably wasn't his favorite person in the world at the time, but you know, I guess I just was myself. And I guess that was, for the most part, that was good enough for people.
Well, I mean, you've earned your keep at this point. It's like, that was like 16 years ago, right? So,
yeah,
I mean, we'll let you stay now. So it's good.
Her mom and her grandmother were always great with me. They really liked me from the beginning. So actually, that was the other thing. So after I met her dad, we left there and we had to stop at her grandmother's house. So I met her grandmother as well. And her grandmother, she passed away a couple years ago as well, but she was an amazing person. She was, I think I was, you know, I probably had a stronger relationship with her than I did my biological grandparents. She was just like a really awesome woman. But I guess the word was, she was telling everybody, like, yeah, she said some really good things about me, but the thing that stuck out was he's very masculine. And I never got a chance to ask her what she meant by that, but I'm
I was like, yes, that's a good thing. All right, yeah. Good.
Yeah, hey, I'll take it. But I'm like, wow, that's a very quick assessment. But hey, I think it helped me along. I think it helped me with everybody else, so I'm not gonna complain.
Actually, so out of curiosity, because you're meeting your wife and you're like meeting her family pretty quickly, how much did that help your self-esteem and your drive moving forward? Because before this, you're predominantly, it's like your internal drive and proving people wrong. How did that shift for you once it was not, there was another person and other people involved?
Well, you know what? It gave me some more motivation for sure, especially now we have the same values. We're wanting to start something together. And I know where I was, you know, I wasn't going to facilitate that at $11 an hour. Right. Okay. So right away when we talked about it, and this was, you know, again, very early on, we had talked about marriage. I was like, okay, well, I need to get another job. So I started working a second job right away. Tanya started working another job as well. There's one point where I was working three jobs, two full-time and one part-time. And that was
what, you know,
that took me right into right around our wedding. But we always managed to find time for each other. A couple of the jobs were jobs where we could, you know, talk on the phone right? Mm-hmm. So, it, you know, they weren't, especially when you're working at night, a lot of jobs, there is a lot of downtime with some of these jobs. So,
yeah,
we were, you know, we were just kind of in it together right from the beginning.
Excellent. That's so, that's motivating in and of itself. It gives you something outside of yourself to believe in and think about, and someone who's supporting you, because that support goes both ways. So I think that that's beautiful. Take me through, you guys marry, you have kids, and at what point did you find your job? Because one of the things that you talk about is that is your job. One of the things that you've talked about in the description is that very specifically.
Yeah.
So it was the third job you had during that time when you guys met, right?
Right. So it was the third job that I had, and it was, you know, I was working as a security supervisor by this point at a, you know, for a contract security company working in downtown, working in the Toronto area. Mm-hmm. And then I got this job at a hospital in downtown Toronto working as a security guard. So it was kind of a step down title wise, but it was an in-house position. It paid more money. And when I started working there, I really liked working in healthcare. I liked the environment. Mm-hmm. And because once we paid for our wedding, there wasn't a need to work three jobs anymore. And that was the job I decided to stay with. And financially it worked out better because I realized, you know, working even less hours here, because I was on call at the beginning, even as I'm working less hours here, I'm still making more money than I was working at this position as a supervisor. And yeah. I was on call 24/7 there. So like if something went wrong at 2 a.m., I'd get a phone call. I'd get woken up invariably for a lot of times it was nonsense, but this was something that I became very involved with. That was my full-time job for a number of years until I got my first management role, but really enjoyed that environment. And that was, again, that was in healthcare. So, you know, I made the shift from just doing more conventional security to working very, you know, something very niche in healthcare. Went through some different management roles, worked at a company where I was, you know, I had a big part in the healthcare component of our service offering. So that was kind of where it was for me. But yeah, it all started around that same time. So I actually started that job 6 weeks before we got married. And that was, there was the job that I worked that supported us for a long time. Well, partially supported us, because obviously my wife had a really good paying job. She made more than me at the time. So, you know, it was, again, just being in that environment, being in healthcare, being able to help people, being able to have a positive influence on somebody's day. I just really took to it.
I mean, that's really phenomenal. So you found a career path that meant a lot to you and got to streamline three jobs down to one, which is a lot less stressful, but still make good money. And that's become your passion as far as a job, a career.
Absolutely. Well, even with what I'm doing today, a lot of my focus is towards healthcare. So I still have that level of involvement. So it's great. I'm able to really use a product. And again, it's a product I used when I was a frontline security officer to write reports. I used it in some management roles as well, but now I get to share it with other people. It was actually going back to this when I decided I wanted to grow in my career and public speaking was something I need to get better at. The first thing I actually presented on was this reporting software. So it's kind of come full circle now to where I work for the company.
I mean, how incredible, Brian. Thank you. Now, let's tie back into this podcast I understand the connection because of your job, the connection to the first two podcasts you have, because you're passionate about what you do. You love what you do. And then let's tie back into you and Tanya because that one is a little outside of what you normally do to some degree.
Absolutely. Yeah, it is.
Disrupt the everyday. Let's connect the struggles that you've had in your past. When did you start? You said you just started discussing it about a year ago.
Yeah, well, actually it wasn't, it was earlier this year. We discussed it and then we just started doing it really at the end of the day. I guess I'll go back to when I first started podcasting. Part of the motivation behind that was, 2 years ago yesterday, my father passed away. And it was, for me, it was pretty unexpected. I took for granted that he still had a lot of life ahead of him. He was 71 years old. But, you know, just reflecting on his life and everything that I learned from him. And, you know, again, even though I was doing fairly well in my career, I was pretty successful. There was still a lot of self-doubt. But, you know, seeing that happening with my dad really made me want to take on some of the opportunities that maybe I wouldn't have before or hadn't in the past. And I had sat on this idea of doing a healthcare security podcast for a year and a half and just didn't take any action on it. But, you know, I think knowing that, getting to see my mortality and just really consider that a little bit more, it just made me want to do this. So I told my wife, you know, at the time, I'm sure she may have thought I was crazy, but she was okay with me doing this. And, yeah, it was well received. And, you know, so now I'll fast forward to me wanting to launch this third one and her jumping in on the idea and saying we should do it together. Mm-hmm. I thought it was good because now it's not going to be necessarily gender specific. You know, both of us are going to have our own unique perspectives and we're going to bring different things out of the conversation. So I think it just can appeal to and be helpful to a larger group of people, which impact is a big thing for me. I haven't talked about this at all, but I also teach part-time at a couple of local colleges. And the reason why I still do it and I really enjoy doing it is because the impact that you have on individuals, and you don't even necessarily know who's benefiting from what you're sharing, what you're teaching. But, you know, all those years later, when somebody sends you a message on Facebook or LinkedIn or whatever, and, you know, credits you for making some kind of positive change in their life, there's nothing that can really replace that. Mm-hmm. So, and that's, and again, that's why we like to share the information that we have. That's why I like to share my story, because if it can impact somebody and help somebody make a better decision, you know, it's worth the, what would have been embarrassment for me before. Now I could really care less what people think, but, you know, it is worth sharing if it's going to help somebody and have a positive impact.
What was it like having the conversation with your wife about, really deeply, about where you were at before you met? I mean, she knew about the divorce and the bankruptcy, but what was it like having the conversation about feeling suicidal? And I mean, I'm imagining she was super supportive and maybe surprised. But what was that process like, and how much have you added that into reaching out to other people now?
Well, yeah, it's definitely something that I'm more comfortable sharing. And I think, to be honest, there was a point where I got so motivated with everything else, I didn't even think about it. So it was really when a few years ago when I got reflecting, probably again around the time my dad passed away, where I was like, wow, I was actually ready to do this. Right? I was ready to drive my car off the road. But, you know, it's something that I had just not even really put any thought into. So, yeah, when I told her, she was pretty, I'm sure she was surprised and, like you said, supportive. But, you know, I think I've done enough crazy things that there's probably not too much I'm going to say or do that will surprise her at this point. But, you know, she's
that's true.
but no, she was very supportive. I don't think she really thought too much of it. But yeah, it was just something that we just never discussed. And again, like, I think it was just even at the back of my mind, I hadn't even really thought about it. I hadn't told anybody. I hadn't told my best friend. Like, nobody knew this other than me, just on this one car ride home this one night.
Right. Brian, thank you so much for coming on. Tell me, is there any parting advice that you would give to people who are struggling with a similar situation?
Yeah, definitely. So the one thing I'll say from my experience, whatever you're going through is finite. It's not going to last forever as long as you're taking the steps to make things better. And whether that step is talking to a professional, someone who can help you through that, you know, that those are going to be the things, like just being able to take those steps in the right direction and knowing, and just keep in mind too, that you don't have to fix everything at once. It takes more than a day to get yourself into a situation like the one I was in. So you're not going to get out of it in a day. Just know that it's going to take time. You know, it kind of the cliche that people will say is people overestimate what they can do in a year, but underestimate what they can do in 5 or 10 years. Yeah. So again, just taking slow steps, taking steps in the right direction every day. You know, you can get out of essentially any situation in life. I want to say it's never worth ending things. You can always work through it. So my advice would be, just if you're thinking that, find help. There's lots of help out there. There's lots of people who are going to be willing to listen and just start making progress. Right. When I think about what I was through and how insurmountable I found it to be at the time, you know, I when I look back, I realize it really wasn't as bad as I made it. And I'll go back to my favorite scripture that I sent you, and it
yes,
is,
yes,
you know, from the book of Nehemiah chapter 5:7, and you know, it says, and then I consulted with myself. You know, so I'm just taking it out of context and taking that one specific part of it. But, you know, again, we talked a lot about the self-talk and the situations that you create for yourself. And, you know, you get yourself into these situations a lot of time. There's always exceptions to the rules, but generally you put yourself in, I put myself in the situation that I was in, regardless of the contributing factors. Maybe if somebody misled me, I still had to make that decision to, you know, to lend money to someone when I didn't have it at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. So really I put myself in that position, and, you know, I had to kind of work to get myself out of it. So now I always just think of that verse, and that's the way I kind of think of it in my head, is I consulted with myself, because I think deep down we know the answers. We know what we need to do. It's just whether we execute on that or not, whether we find somebody who can help us, whether we find a coach like yourself who can, you know, help us get those answers, because a coach isn't going to necessarily tell you what to do, but they're going to help you, you know, just coaches that I've worked with, the professional coaches, even, they help you dig those answers out of yourself. Like, it's there. Everything that we have is there. We just need to access it.
Brian, thank you so much for being on and sharing your story. I appreciate you so much.
I appreciate you. Thank you for having me on. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you for investing your time with me on At a Crossroads with the Naked Podcaster. I'm so glad that you joined in the conversation. It would be amazing if you would share this episode with someone you think can benefit from it. All guests' links and audience freebies are available on the podcast page of momof18.com. This podcast was designed to help you in your struggles. So reach out and let me know what you enjoy and what you would like to see more of. It will support me on the journey to causing a worldwide epidemic of healing, gratitude, and joy. Until next time, remember, you're not alone in your struggle. Reach out to me on any platform. I love to connect. You are worth it to me.